from KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, this is Forum. I'm Scott Schaefer, and today for Mina Kim. Coming up this hour, the musical Dear Evan Hansen took Broadway by storm last year, winning 6 Tony Awards, including Best Musical and Best Actor. It explores important and wrenching themes like teenage depression and suicide, alienation, and how social media have in some ways made being a teenager harder than ever, even as it creates the false sense of connection. Dear Evan Hansen opened in San Francisco this week, and this hour we'll be joined by 2 of the actors, and we'll get started right after this news. Welcome back to Forum. I'm Scott Schaefer, in today for Mina Kim. And this hour, we're talking about a musical that is definitely one of the hottest tickets in town. It's Dear Evan Hansen, which opened this week at the Curran Theater in San Francisco. It won 6 Tony Awards last year, including Best Musical and Best Actor in a Leading Performance. For those of you who don't know, Dear Evan Hansen is a story about teenage anxiety, depression, isolation, the need for human connection, and the role that social media can play in both connecting people and exploiting tragedy. We'll get into the plot and some of the themes of the musical in a moment. Joining us this hour, 2 of the actors from the traveling production who play the mother of 2 of the boys in the play, Jessica Phillips, who plays Heidi Hansen is the character, Evan Hansen's mom. Good to have you with us.
Thanks for having us.
And also here is Christiane Knoll, who plays the role of Connor's mom. And we should say that Connor is a classmate of Evan's, and spoiler alert, I think we can say he commits suicide early.
Oh, I was just going to say he's the tragedy.
Yeah, yes. Yeah, and but also comes back in the play in different ways, and we'll talk mm-hmm. about that as well. So I want to get everybody on the same page, our listeners, in terms of what the plot is. But I want to begin with the opening song, one of the songs you sang, Jessica. It's called "Anybody Have a Map," and it starts the musical. Let's listen.
Another stellar conversation for the scrapbook. Another stumble as I'm reaching for the right thing to say. Well, I'm kind of coming up empty, can't find my way to you. Does anybody have a map? Anybody maybe happen to know how the hell to do this? I don't know if you can tell, but this is me just pretending to know. So where's the map? I need a clue, because the scary truth is I'm flying blind.
And again, that is Jessica Phillips performing "Anybody Have a Map," the opening number in Dear Evan Hansen. And Jessica, I imagine a lot of moms and dads have that feeling, like, yeah, how do I do this? You know, and in this case, your character, Evan Hansen's mom, is dealing with a kid who has a lot of social phobias and anxieties.
Yeah, and she's a single mom, and she is trying to figure it out, as all parents are. And she is spinning a lot of plates, trying to take care of her kid, take care of them. And actually, that song is the way that we introduce both of the moms in the play. So the scene right after that is the Murphy scene where Christiane sings a verse expressing a similar, you know, kind of struggle about connecting and how to be a good mom and feeling like, I keep failing.
Yeah. It's fun because since it is a duet, that the notion that they are separate but yet together
in their plight, they don't know each other at this point.
No, they haven't met, but then it overlaps, and you see, regardless of circumstance, mm-hmm. you know, as a parent, they are meeting a lot of the same frustrations and difficulties.
Yeah, and Jane, as you point out, Jessica, Heidi Hansen is a single mom, and your character, Christiane, is married. And in fact, I think that first scene is a dinner or lunch, some kind of a
breakfast
mm-hmm. in the home.
The beginning of the first day of school.
And you see that tension between the mother and the father.
Yeah. You see a family that theoretically has it all. They're affluent. Their kids are all at the breakfast table together. He's getting ready. He's on the phone, ready to go to what you imagine is a high powered job. But they're missing each other entirely.
And they're both missing mm-hmm. Connor, the son, who seems to be perhaps maybe stoned, or he's just withdrawn.
Well, he doesn't want to go to school. And he's expressed that he doesn't want to go to school. And his father has decided he's not worth listening to because he's probably high. So look at him. Of course, why are you bothering?
Yeah.
Why are you bothering? And the sister, no, he's definitely high. And I'm still trying to we've had this conversation. No, mm-hmm. You have to go to school. No, I don't want you to be high because he is high. But everyone's sort of given up on him, and you can see that.
Well, and as we're talking about, I mean, there's all kinds of tension, because there's tension between Zoe, his Connor's sister. The two of them have, not a pleasant history, it seems. The parents maybe are taking different approaches to how to deal with their son.
Yeah,
so there's some tension between them.
They're not a unified front, necessarily.
Yeah. So let's just broaden this out a little bit. I'll do my best here to kind of summarize the plot. Evan Hansen.
Ooh, good for you.
I've written it down, I gotta say. So Evan is in therapy. Evan Hansen is in therapy, and he's dealing with his anxiety, and a doctor instructs him to write a letter to himself every day. Dear Evan Hansen. And he does that.
Oh, no. Well, dear Evan Hansen, today is going to be a good day, and here is why. And that's the big point of it, so that he can focus on
the positive.
Right.
Yeah. And so he writes one of those letters at school, prints it out. And it gets snatched off the printer by Connor, who is this, withdrawn, another kid who is an outsider in the school. And then he goes on, as I said earlier, Connor, shortly thereafter, he gets the letter. The letter mentions Zoe, who is his sister.
Mm-hmm.
He commits suicide and is found with the letter. And it looks like he's written the letter to Evan Hansen, right?
That is the misunderstanding that kind of sets the snowball down the hill. Yeah.
And this is a story, Jessica, about, as we said, anxiety and belonging, but also about, wanting to fit in, and how a lie, in some ways, just like you said, snowballs. And in some ways, everyone benefits from the lie, at least at first.
That word lie, I think, is kind of overstated, because it really...
Tell us what happens.
It's not a lie. It's
truly a misunderstanding.
It is really a misunderstanding that because of Evan's situation, mm-hmm. how he feels about himself, how he has been existing in his life, he doesn't know how to correct in a succinct manner, and realizes in going along with the misunderstanding, he's actually helping this family feel better about their son.
And more than anything else, he's connecting.
He's connecting
with this family. He's connecting with peers at school. He is forming the relationships that he's been longing for, and he's doing it in a way that he feels is helpful and positive and hopeful. And there isn't any intention of trying to deceive anybody,
manipulate
it is really...
Well, that's the initial, but then mm-hmm. he does embrace it, and he does lie, right?
Well, that's the human nature of it, and then
trying to make it all work.
And we need an act two.
Right. I think many teens and all of us who have, come of age, in tricky situations, there's a point at which we find we may be in over our heads, and we have to figure a way out. And for Evan, I think he goes into a place of not knowing exactly how to do that, and not knowing how to extricate himself in a way that isn't harmful.
And we should say that the initial misunderstanding is that the Connors, the family of the deceased student Connor, they because he had this letter when he died, when they found him, they assumed they had a relationship. Evan and Connor were friends.
Exactly. Connor's family had always had the notion that he was isolated. He had no friends. And so for him to show up in the condition that he's in is sort of feeding into, we lost our child. And when this letter shows up, it gives a sense of hope. Oh, wait, no, he did connect with someone. And then when we meet this pure, lovely young man mm-hmm. that is the antithesis of what we would think our son would be hanging out with, it gives birth to a whole other side. And at least for Cynthia, for my character, she's desperate to believe something beautiful and wonderful about her son. And he is all of that. He's the seed that turns into the redwood tree, you know, about that idea.
And then the other piece of it is that Evan, in his letter that Connor is found with, he has sort of a crush on Zoe, Connor's sister, right? And so he, in some ways, suddenly he's...
Evan has a crush.
And so suddenly he's brought into Connor's family and he's sitting at the table with in the living room with Zoe.
Right.
And so he gets to spend time with her as a result of this misunderstanding as well. Complicated.
Very.
And of course, we should say that the lead actor in this, from the beginning when it first opened on Broadway, it's an extraordinary role. I was fortunate enough to have seen it on Broadway a few weeks ago, just before Thanksgiving. And I should say we were hoping to have Ben Levi Ross, who plays Evan in the national tour, be with us. He's a little under the weather. And, you know, Jessica, I mean, just talk about the physicality and the emotion that goes into playing this role of Evan Hansen.
First, Ben Ross is an extraordinary actor and an extraordinary human being, and this character requires an actor who can be 100% emotionally available,
vulnerable,
and over the course of the play, we watch Evan navigate pretty much every emotion out there, and it requires full physical, emotional, psychological, vocal stamina, and it's really an Olympic feat, and requires him to. I mean, essentially, doesn't leave the stage for 3 hours. So,
yeah, and extraordinarily, he is whoever the actor is playing, Evan Hansen is crying through a number of these songs, and it's, you know, as someone in the audience, it's just extraordinary to see, like, how do you do that, you
know? Yeah,
well, that's my role. I cry for 3 hours. That's sort of what I do. But Ben talks about this a lot, that yes, a lot of times that's what the audience sees. Oh my goodness, he's crying through all of these shows. But when something is written as strongly as this piece is, and you are as open as he is, you jump on the train and you go with it. And he will say that sometimes you will cry, sometimes it will be a huge emotional release, and sometimes it won't be. But that's not the goal. You end up going where the piece takes you.
And let's hear one of the songs that Evan Hansen sings, and it's called Waving Through a Window, and this is Ben Ross in the national tour singing.
I've learned to slam on the brake before I even turn the key, before I make the mistake, before I lead with the worst of me. Give them no reason to stare. No slipping up if you slip away. So I got nothing to share. No, I got nothing to say. Step out of the sun if you keep getting burned. Step out of the sun because you've learned, because you've learned. On the outside, always looking in, will I?
Again, that's Ben Ross singing Waving Through a Window from Dear Evan Hansen, which opened this week in San Francisco. And Jessica Phillips, I'm wondering, you know, the audience is, and just hearing that music, I'm welling up already. The audiences are, you can hear people sobbing or trying to stop from crying in the audience. And I'm wondering, you know, do you have a sense of how parents in the audience react versus young people who, you know, may relate?
I mean, and we're meeting these people at the stage door as well. And I think the audience is walking out feeling so connected and moved and also vulnerable. And we have only to walk out the stage door and have, I'll have women grab me and say, I'm a single mom. And I saw myself up there and it was just amazing to see myself. There are very quiet, intimate moments during the play where we can hear the audience emoting. We can hear people responding, physically, vocally responding. And for me, near the end of the play, when we have a very tender moment, Ben and I, Evan and Heidi, have this tender moment at the end where they finally are able to connect. and it is, it is a really profound moment for us to tap into the audience. Yeah. And I can hear them with us.
If the audience hasn't started crying prior to that over the course of the evening, this is what pushes them over the cliff is that scene. Because it is the one moment that is not on the clock, as it were.
Yeah.
Literally and figuratively, it is a beautiful moment of a mother being able to tell her son of her vulnerabilities and how, right. I've made mistakes and you've made mistakes and that's okay. And we're going to get through this together. And the audience, if you're, they're just, they jump over and they're
And I actually said earlier today, I was talking about this. I think that it is not just parents who are responding to this parent child moment of finally seeing eye to eye and dropping down into this intimate level of connection. I think it reaches all people, because whether you have a parent or whether you are a parent or have a child in this age group or have that specific experience, the idea of sitting with someone with whom you've had, you aren't able to connect, and finally saying, "No, I get you," mm-hmm. and you get me, and we're having a suspended moment in time where we really see each other is incredibly profound, I think, for all people.
Well, and I think that a lot of times kids, until at least they become adults, and sometimes even then, they don't understand the sacrifices that they're. Parents made mm-hmm. for them, and certainly single moms. And in this case, Evan's mom, I mean, she knew when she broke up with, Evan's father that it was going to be tough. And there would be times when she wasn't there.
Well, Evan's father left.
Yeah. And, yes, good point. Good clarification.
And yet she shielded Evan from the reality of that story in order to maintain a healthier relationship with his dad and the memory of his dad.
Yeah, and I think the song you're referring to is that where the truck pulls up in the in the driveway. Oh my God, yeah. I don't think we have that one ready to play. Just, probably just as well.
I don't think you want to go there just yet. But I think what's remarkable is that what we see of Heidi through this story is her. Sometimes inability to say anything right. I mean, she's trying so hard to do it right that she almost doesn't ever get it right. And it is not an issue of intention. It is that she really wants so badly to give her son a good life and to provide for him. That she, she's scrambling, to just stay inside those moments and remain intact with him in that relationship. And this is the moment where she finally does.
Talking this hour about the musical Dear Evan Hansen, if you have a chance to go see it while it's here in town, do it. You won't regret it. Our guest this hour, Jessica Phillips, who plays one of the moms, Evan Hansen's mom, and Christiane Knoll, who plays Connor's mom, one of the other characters. And Christiane, you were making a point before we began this morning about a lot of these roles are so demanding, and when you leave the theater at the end of the performance, you want to kind of be by yourself, or you want to be in a place that's comforting. And as you pointed out, when you're on tour, if you're in New York doing this, you can go home.
Well, that's the whole notion. Whenever we, if we're lucky enough to work on Broadway and we live in New York City, then you do your show, you go home, there's a constant there, there's a comfort level there, it's a safe place, you can close the door.
Your family may be there.
You can go, ugh. And when you're touring, that's not the case. And we have gotten
How do you compensate for that?
Well, you get a little more
heavy
adept.
Heavy drinking.
You get a little more adept at trying to create your environment and if you whatever that may mean to you, and make a little home for yourself. But still, especially for the first few days in a new place, there's new sounds, there's new things. So you never really can just go, oh, okay. And that's hard. So everyone has a different way of doing it, whether you go out and exercise or go for walks or see the neighborhood. It's still hard to turn off. You know, I mean, we could travel with isolation tanks, then it would be okay.
Yeah. And do you all see each other, like, in between times that you're at the theater, or do you need to just be apart?
I think it's different for everybody. The way you used to tour, there would be a hotel where everyone would stay, and you come back after the show, and everyone would meet at the bar. And whether you'd consume or not really wasn't the point. You would sit and yap, and that would be with the musicians and the crew and the actors and the people who were running the whole thing. And then someone would say, oh, what are you going to do tomorrow? Oh, I think I was going to go. Oh, can I come? Oh, that'd be great. Okay, we'll meet you in the lobby. Or where are you heading today? You know, there was more overlap, but now with Airbnb, people kind of can make up their own choices. We're more spread out. So, again, not more isolated.
More isolation.
If we want to spend time together, there really has to be an effort on everybody's part to do so.
Well, and that sort of raises the issue of what is another theme here is social media.
There you go. And the
connections,
how
social media are used to connect people. And in the case of this musical, Jessica, it's, you know, the other students kind of at the school where Connor and Evan go use it to become part of the grief, sort of claim their part of the grief and their part of the healing.
Right.
Whether or not they knew really either of them.
That's exactly right. And I think, you know, more than anything else, we are figuring out this social media raising our kids. Yes, the landscape, the raising our kids in this new time as we go along. And of course, we are seeing that the curated nature of how our kids and how we are promoting ourselves online is a part of what we have to navigate on an emotional level. And this is what we see in the play. We see kids who are all feeling isolated and left out in real life gain popularity or connection or some sort of
status.
sense of status through their online personas surrounding this event.
Well, this was sort of based on a true event that happened to the writers, right? Mm-hmm. Wasn't this someone had died and he watched people, this very thing unfold. People
claiming some part of it.
Mm-hmm. And so that was part of what they wanted to explore was that this was a real thing that happened.
And like other aspects of the musical, there is a benefit to that. I mean, right? It does bring people together.
And I mean, there's a thing, well, you know, there'll be some third world tsunami we have to raise money for. Mm-hmm. I mean, so Lord knows we do that all the time.
Right.
And it's a way to reach a lot of people and bring them together, find that community.
And in this story, it was philanthropic.
Yeah.
So there's that element. But where is the
But not
line?
Entirely altruistic. It's fair to say. All right. We're going to take a break and we're going to continue our conversation with Jessica Phillips and Christiane Knoll from Dear Evan Hansen. We'll play some more music. And of course, we want to hear from you as well. If you've seen the play or perhaps you have an experience with the kinds of themes that we're talking about and that the musical explores, it's 866-733-6786. If you want to give us a ring, 866-733-6786, or you can email your comments to forum@kqed.org. I'm Scott Schaefer here today for Mina Kim. Now, welcome back to Forum. Scott Schaefer here. And for the rest of the hour, we're talking with two of the actors in Dear Evan Hansen, the musical, which won 6 Tony Awards on Broadway. It's the national tour is here in San Francisco at the Curran Theater, opened this week. And with us here in the studio, Jessica Phillips, who plays Heidi Hansen, Evan Hansen's mom, and Christiane Knoll, who plays Cynthia Murphy, who is Connor's mom. These are the two of the young men who are at the center of this story. And if you want to join us, give us a call at 866-733-6786, 866-733-6786. Or you can email us. It's forum@kqed.org. During the break, we were just chatting about, in general, do actors, actresses, do you, you know, especially in a musical like this, which really took Broadway by storm, do you when you step into these roles, to what extent, Jessica or Christiane, do you want to see the original, or do you want to not see it because you want to kind of do your own version of it? Christiane?
Well, yeah. I think we can bat back and forth here. Because I think each actor is different and each circumstance is different. And certainly it's important to see what the tone of the piece is.
Right.
We were asked to see the show if we hadn't already, and then to see it, if we had seen it, to see it again so we could see how it's existing at this moment. So you could sort of see what they were going for and know what vocabulary it was you're going to be speaking.
Right, the bigger picture.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But many times, at least now at this point in my career, I would rather not, because I want to unpack it and see what speaks to me, and then hopefully have the time in the rehearsal room to then have them go, yeah, that's good, but no, I want you to do that.
Yeah, you know? Which is exactly what we got, which was a huge gift. We were cast as an ensemble and got to rehearse from scratch as an ensemble, as opposed to being slotted into an existing production as
easier?
A replacement. I mean, I think
it's a different skill set.
It is, yeah. And I think, first of all, this piece is so spectacularly constructed. It's written so beautifully. And the creative team is both so generous about inviting our own interpretations of the characters and also so specific about what they ultimately want to see in terms of the
and
message.
What the points are that we have to make sure that we hit throughout the evening.
Exactly.
If we sort of zigzag to get there, that's okay. But as long as we are hitting these emotional points.
That's right. And so that we were able to rehearse for 4 weeks in New York and develop our own relationships along the way and given room to bring our own versions, our own interpretations of these characters was a real gift.
And the thing that's been exciting about it is that the fan base of this show is with the, obviously it's been running on Broadway now for 2 years. They just had their anniversary and some productions of it prior to that. And then with the CD is everywhere. There are a lot of people that are very much invested in it. But I have yet to very much have, I haven't seen the cutting, the bite, because with social media, you always have the people that want to take it apart.
Yeah, that are critical.
But take it apart or to criticize it.
Yeah, but that's not been the case. I haven't experienced it. The fans feel so strongly about these characters that they're excited to see how another actor will interpret it. They don't expect it to be the same. They don't, and they haven't even gone, oh, I like that one better. I don't like it's more of the story and how it's coming through a new filter, and they really have been so embracing of it.
Yeah,
it's incredible.
Agreed.
Yeah, well, and sort of to your point, I mentioned that we had seen it on Broadway a couple of weeks ago, and I didn't realize until after I was looking through the playbill that I had seen Michael Lee Brown, who is the sort of the backup, not the regular,
the alternate.
Evan, the alternate. Yeah,
I mean,
Evan
it's
Hansen.
We don't even like to say we have the performing cast and we have the offstage cast. There's 8 people that are on stage and 7 people that we travel with who are ready at any moment to step into the roles that they have learned.
And that's a whole skill as well.
It sure is. And every Evan that we have on staff has now gone on, and they are all spectacular in their own right. And it's unfortunate when people go and the piece of paper falls out that they think, oh, what is going to happen? But inevitably at the end of the evening, just like you said, I had no idea, because there isn't there's a difference because
it's
a different person.
Well, if it's Bette Midler, something
right.
like that.
But even the people that were covering Bette Midler, you were not seeing a short shrift show, with Donna Murphy, goodness knows.
Right.
let's hear another bit from the play, another song from the musical. This one is called Disappear, and it's performed by the original Broadway cast, including Mike Feist and Ben Platt. And before we hear it, it comes just after Connor Murphy commits suicide. Anything you want to say about this particular song before we hear it?
It's not necessarily after he's committed suicide. We are now meeting the Connor in Evan's mind that is sort of becoming his alter ego that he is confiding
So the character
within.
Reappears on stage and is having
sorry,
a conversation.
Spoiler, sorry.
Let's hear it.
Guys like you and me, we're just the losers who keep waiting to be seen. right? I mean, no one seems to care or stops to notice that we're there, so we get lost in the in-between. But if you can somehow keep them thinking of me and make me more than an abandoned memory, well, that means we matter too. It means someone will see that you are there. No one deserves to be forgotten. No one deserves to fade away. No one should come and go and have no one know he was ever even here. No one deserves to disappear.
And again, that is from Dear Evan Hansen, Disappear, sung by the original Broadway cast, Mike Feist, who plays Connor, and Ben Platt, who plays Evan Hansen. What do you hear, either of you, from parents? Because suicide, of course, is a big part of this. That's sort of the beginning of the play. What do you hear from parents or siblings or, you know, folks who have experienced that firsthand?
Right. We get a lot of letters and a lot of people approaching us at the stage door to talk about their experience with suicide or attempted suicide or family relationships around this topic. And mostly what I'm hearing is gratitude for opening the conversation. We have a lot of families who come to see this show, and I think it's often spurred by the teenager who's excited about the
and they want to go, yeah,
about the show. The cast knows the cast album, but what I am finding is that parents are coming and saying, this was an opportunity for me to have a shared experience with my kid. And I went home and I had a great conversation where we were able to touch on these very scary topics that I don't know that we would ever have broached if it weren't for having seen this show together.
And when I did see it in New York, I was sitting next to a family. The mother started just telling me all sorts of things, and their 16-year-old daughter was there as well. And I don't know whether a conversation would have taken place, but that's the other thing that I've noticed. For having experienced this together as a group, and they've all seen it, and they all know that they've seen it, there is a healing. There's a discussion that for the shared experience, and that you could tell. Well, you know, maybe they'll have a chat, maybe they won't, but there was a new understanding of each other for having witnessed this. I've had people coming up, you know, in a very quiet moment, if you can have a quiet moment at the stage door, where they're like, can I tell you something? You know, you saved a life today.
Wow.
And they were sincere.
Yeah.
And we had a whole afternoon with a psychiatrist, because we are partnered with five or six organizations. I know JED is one of them, but different suicide prevention and teenage health and LGBTQ and stuff like that. Sort of talking to us how to deal with these heavier moments because we're not trained professionals. We are just actors. We are not the characters that we are portraying. We are experiencing and can experience the same thing that you do. So how do you deal with that? But still, this is a show about connection. And inevitably, you come across someone who is desperate for connection.
Right.
You can tell the difference between someone who's sort of glomming on and someone who just wants to share something a hand on the shoulder that you just say, thank you, I'm glad you're here.
Yeah.
You know, that kind of a thing.
I'm wondering, do either of you have kids?
Yes, we both do.
Yes.
Yeah. And how old are they?
Mine is 9 and she's got the teenage
boys. I have 2 teenage boys.
Whoa.
So
yeah.
This is relevant for me. I know I tell this story a lot,
but
when we started rehearsals for this show in New York, it was also the first week of school. And one morning I got up and I sent my teenagers off to school, and my older son is a senior in high school. So I sent him off to his first day. And then I came into work and started rehearsing the scene where Heidi sends Evan off to his first day of senior year. And I literally had to stop. I had to stop rehearsals. I was like, you guys, this is for me. I can't believe this is happening. I just did this an hour ago in real life. And yeah, so it's it really touches something pretty intimate for me, this role.
Have your kids seen the play?
They have.
Yeah,
what do they think? Well, I get a lot of street cred from my kids because the younger son anyway goes to a performing arts high school, and so this, you know, I'm pretty popular
mom.
Now. But
he's the cool kid now.
Yeah, but you know, I think more than anything, what struck me was that they kept elbowing each other in the audience and saying, Mom actually says that. I've heard her say, oh, wow, she actually says that. And I think that just speaks to how, you know, beautifully written this script is, this book by Stephen Levinson.
Feeling.
Yeah, it really is. Yeah, its conversational aspect is one element of that.
Well, and they were so young when they wrote it.
Yeah.
I mean, just even the notion that they could come up. That sounds so demeaning. You know, the old fart that I am is talking about, oh, these young kids, how could they come up with these things?
Where did they draw from?
Where are they drawing? How do they know exactly what a mother would want to say? It's like, well, it's not just what the mother would say. It's what the son would like to hear.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
So.
And the sort
amazing.
Of. Bad word, you. The pedigree of the writers and the director, it was at the Normal Heart, I think, which had been performed earlier on Broadway. Like, what had they written before? What were they? Because this was not their...
Oh, what they had written, Paul and Pasek?
Yeah.
Well, but at the time that they wrote this, they had only... I mean, they've obviously
done
La La Land and...
La La Land, right.
The Greatest Showman, that's more recent. Prior mm-hmm. to
this... It was Christmas Story.
Had they done Christmas Story already? Mm-hmm. And they did a show called Dogfight.
Dogfight. Mm-hmm.
And I think that... Was that it? In terms of the pieces that had been read, you know, fully produced at that
yes.
moment. And that's when our producer,
Stacey
Mindich.
Yeah.
Said, I want to work with you. What do you want to write? Which yeah. is
wow.
a dream. And,
yeah. and it was a long process, too, of right? There were many iterations and songs that got written and never used.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. In fact...
Well, they just released a new CD of the songs that
were cut.
Oh,
yeah.
really?
Yeah.
That's a sign of success, I think, because when you want to... People want to hear the ones that weren't used.
And it's lovely because they're using... there's still two original cast members... on Broadway right now, mm-hmm. but they used all of the people that are in the show at the moment, which is, again, giving creed to the notion that it's these characters, it's this piece, it's the writing.
Right.
It could be sung by anybody.
We've got some comments from listeners, and I want to give the phone number out. No one's called, which is unusual, and I'm wondering, sometimes I think if people haven't seen a play or if they haven't read the book, they feel like there's not a way into the conversation mm-hmm. for them.
But oh, these are... call. Say hi. We're fun. We're ready.
Well, and these are such human themes, you know, isolation, yeah. social media, being a parent, being a kid who's isolated. I'll give the number out again. It's 866-733-6786. 866-733-6786. Come on in. The water's warm. You can email us as well. It's kqedforum@kqed.org. Dion writes, I've never seen the show, but just listening to the soundtrack, I can't make it through without crying either. yeah. It's,
Me neither.
Do you still, I mean, at what point, if ever, do you, I don't know what the right way to say this is, but I mean, when you hear something the first time, it hits you in a certain way, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, when you're performing it. How does that work?
Yeah, I mean, it's
sometimes
similar.
You have to think about when Snape says always at the end of Harry Potter, and you know, and that you realize he still loves Lily after all these years.
Christiane, you're
and
such a nerd.
I am, you know. But we, you know, it's
I mean, as actors, it's our job to bring these people to life and to tell the truth in every moment that we deliver this material.
Completely.
And what that means for us on a practical level is that we function within a range of emotion. And sometimes, at least for me, I hit certain points of the storytelling and I'm really broken down and open and vulnerable. And there are other times where I'm more pulled together. And in in either extreme, I have to just be in that moment and tell the truth and listen and respond authentically and know that the material will speak for itself. I don't have to have a complete emotional breakdown in order to elicit an emotional response from the audience. In fact, it's actually the opposite. I need to let the audience have their response, and I do that by not having it for them, but by just being available. And really, it is about just saying these beautiful words and singing this beautiful music and trying to do that authentically.
Yeah, she's lucky. I have to cry for 3 hours.
You do.
But that's also something that's really interesting. I think when we started this process, I think we were finding the commonality between the two mothers. And as we've gone through it and hearing how Michael Greif was directing her and hearing how the direction I was being guided to, it was not so much the commonality, but actually the disparate points about them, where Heidi is a very fiery and shoots from the hip,
impulsive
and all of that, and Cynthia is more not calculated, but she's more of a
deliberate
and careful, and she doesn't she's the emotional one in a family that is not expressing. She is feeling for everybody.
Yeah, and that you think that's partly because Christiane, the Murphys are more they're upper class, you know, they're maybe used
She's the hostess and always trying to do for everyone else and trying to make everyone else's life as beautiful and wonderful and from a very well-intentioned, kind, loving place, but still obviously missing the boat with her husband, with her children, with everybody.
But we've coaxed some listeners.
Yay!
To the phone.
Who's so, here? Yes.
Nicole in San Francisco, welcome.
Hello, thank you. I wanted to say I saw the show twice in New York. I'm going to go see it tomorrow with my son.
Oh, great. Come to the stage door.
I will. It was the most powerful show I've ever seen because the whole audience, there was a universal truth that everyone realized that at some point everyone felt alone. And it was very powerful and everyone was crying. And I'm wondering, how do you stay focused in the face of that incredible emotion coming from your audience?
It is the final ingredient. That's a dream for a theatrical actor. When the audience is as focused on the material as you are, now, then you are all in it for beginning to end, and that makes our job super easy because you know what you're slinging out there is being received.
Nicole, I'm curious, do you feel like you've seen it twice, you're going to see it again? I mean, do you get different things? Have you gotten something different the second time you saw it, and why are you going to see it a third time? What are you looking for?
I wanted to see a different cast interpretation of the material, and I wanted to share it with my son, who has been singing every song since he first heard it. He's 8 years old.
Oh, yay!
He's a show tuber, and I'm just excited to see what the new cast does with it because it feels like Ben and those people had such a big stamp on it, and I'm really, really excited to see you guys in action.
Thank you.
Great. Well, we can't wait for you to come.
All right. Very
thank you.
Very good to hear from you. Thanks so much, Nicole. And let's go now to San Rafael, and Aiden is on the line. Welcome.
Hi, thanks for having me. I'm delighted to get to ask a question. Obviously, Dear Evan Hansen is having a huge moment right now in the musical theater world, but more broadly speaking, in America. And I was just wondering how you're sort of steeling yourself against that and keeping a level head, but also how are you thinking about what's next and returning to the broader theater scene after having such a defining moment in your career?
Christiane?
Oh, at first I wasn't sure which way what you were going with
exactly.
That. No, that's interesting. Well, certainly for the adults in the cast, we've had some wonderful experiences leading up to this. And God willing, we will have some more incredible experiences. And I Yes, this has when this came across all of our plates, I think we all realized this is going to be a very special moment. So let us honor and do justice to the piece, to the fans of this piece, and service it as well as we can and enjoy it. Because, I mean, I was fortunate enough at the very beginning of my career to have sort of the beginnings of the fan sensation piece kind of started with Jekyll and Hyde. And so I have had one of these kinds of moments where people just go, ah! You know, and I don't know whether another one of those will come up again, because these are very significant. I mean, the Smithsonian just put the shirt and the cast.
The polo shirt and the cast.
In
the
museum.
American History Museum, yeah.
You know, they put it in those sealed bags and, you know, all of a sudden Stacey's not allowed to touch it anymore after she just handed it over. It's like, nope, nope, you know, dirty shirt and all. I mean, I think it just comes with the territory. That, and we are more studied in it now, of realizing that just because you've done something wonderful doesn't mean that next year when you're not doing something wonderful, people are still going to want to see what you have to put on Instagram.
Right, exactly. Exactly.
Know. Yeah, and I think, the adults in the company have had enough flops on Broadway or failures, creative failures or shows that didn't
let's
fly.
Just say, shows that didn't pan out the way you had hoped they might.
Didn't have a fan base such as
there
this.
Are no Spoken failures. Like
right?
There are no failures.
Not a creative success. I mean, not a
critical success.
Yeah. I think, this is the gig for us. We go from project to project, and if we're lucky enough to continue to work and fortunate enough to be able to be selective about the projects that we take on, then we get in moments like this and we feel a lot of gratitude. Mm-hmm. We feel very excited to be a part of this message that we're bringing now to the entire United States.
All right. Aiden, thanks so much for the call. Appreciate that. Tiffany in San Francisco, you're next.
Hi. I am so excited the show is coming, or is in San Francisco now. My daughter is 15 and got me interested in it last year, and it's been a super bonding, wonderful experience for us, and we're coming this Sunday.
Oh, wonderful.
You've been listening to the music together?
Oh, my gosh, so much. And then the dialogue, it's such a timely piece. I'm also a school teacher, so it's such a timely piece. It's remarkable, the content that it brings up. And, I love how you explained that it wasn't a lie. That is such a critical thing that sometimes you just get in over your head and you don't have that skill in your pocket. And I just have to tell you, the minute I heard you were talking about it, I started crying. I'm crying already.
Tiffany, are teachers using it at all in schools to, talk about some of these issues?
I teach primary grade. Yes and no. But my daughter is 15, and they're all dealing with social anxiety. They're all dealing with it in a way that I've never seen before.
Right.
And having things like this does allow teachers and parents and youth to access a safe way to dialogue, a safe way to talk about the other, about their own experience. So having it out there, having you guys on the radio, and creating places for people to access this is amazing. So, I'm going to actually, we're working on a digital citizenship with our upper grades, the fourth and fifth graders. And, these are things to just bring up with them. This is now in a Broadway musical. Get out of here, right?
Yeah, great. Well, Tiffany, thanks so much for going. Enjoy the show.
You guys are amazing. Thank you. Bye.
Thank you so much, Tiffany.
Well, in a way, I think we've seen a similar thing with Hamilton, where this has really, because of the music, I think, really struck young people.
Thank you for putting us in that category.
and which is also, I think, isn't Hamilton's costume in the Smithsonian as well, I think?
Yeah. I believe so.
But it's a great way into history, to make it relatable and something that young people can engages them in history, which is fantastic. All right, let's go to Sally in Oakland. You're next. Welcome.
Hi. Thank you so much. I am a boy mom also.
All right.
Although the baby's now a babe. And I've just completely enjoyed this. We read the play together, and I'm going to bring him over Christmas break when he's back from school. And this has just been probably the most wonderful forum program I've ever listened to. And I'm looking forward to meeting you at the stage door.
Yes, please. Please.
Yeah, no, it's just, it's great that your mom's and you're doing this. And there are so many young men who are sensitive. And he's already had two friends die in his life, you know. So it's very, very relevant. And sorry, the dog.
The dog answered too.
Every time I get on the phone, they start barking.
All right, well.
You can probably relate to that. Anyway, thank you for doing
what you're doing
and for traveling so far to bring the show to us.
Thank you, Sally, so much.
Thanks so much. Enjoy the show. Boy, we've now the phone lines are full.
Of course.
That's great. And I want to finish up with one more song, and this is Finale, which is... you know, the end of the musical, and kind of sums things up, or another tearjerker, I think it's fair to say. But Jessica Phillips, Christiane Knoll, thank you both so much for coming in. And this plays, I think, through the end of December?
December 30th.
December 30th at the Current Theater. And as I said, it's well worth it. If you have a chance, if you're able to get a ticket, I think they do that digital lottery.
There is a lottery. So my friends actually won it for opening night.
Oh, wow.
You can get seats. And they got row J in the orchestra for $25 a ticket. So
awesome.
Win the lottery.
Well, here it is. This is the finale from Dear Evan Hansen. I'm Scott Schaefer here today for Munich Kim. Thanks for listening.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Germanicos Foundation and the Generosity Foundation.